folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. I guess if you've heard the intro, welcome again to Democratic Perspective. We're going to be doing a show today on a local issue, the auto camp that they want to build at Bear Mountain. We'll be explaining exactly what it is and why it's there and what the objections are. Here in the studio, I have Mixtress Hava, who's a internet and local activists, particularly on local issues, right?
Correct. Good morning. Yes.
So good morning from her. And we have three people online. First, we have Klaus. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
Good
Say
morning,
hello.
Everybody.
Klaus Van Suterheim is online. He's a regular guy. And then we have two guests, Dina Bindley and Charlie Pitcher. And you guys are from a group called Save Bear Mountain. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yes.
And you both live out near where this auto camp would be going in.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Okay. So describe what auto camp is, because I know some of our listeners have been following the controversy. It came before the Sedona City Council where they weren't really thrilled about it. We talked to the current supervisor, and he thought it was basically revenue neutral, so forth and so on. But tell people a little bit about it. Don't assume that they know.
So AutoCamp is a California developer who builds what are called glamping sites. And they define glamping as staying in an Airstream trailer on a 100-unit property, which is what they're proposing at the foot of Bear Mountain. There would be 85 Airstream trailers, 10 huts, and 5 tents. And the huts are there because the Airstream trailers are not ADA compliant. And what makes it glamping isn't that you're staying in an Airstream trailer. It's that you cook outdoors on an outdoor fire pit with compressed sawdust wood so that you have this experience a little bit of camping called you make all your meals outside.
Right. No kitchens inside the units.
Correct.
Correct.
And
so that means a lot of campfires, right?
Exactly. At least they're in contained metal fire pits. It's not a place where you can bring your RV and stay overnight. It's not a place where you can drive up in an OHV or with a trailer with an OHV behind it. It's a place for people who show up in automobiles, why it's called auto camp. And it is essentially a 100-suite hotel. That's the best way to think about it. This is a hotel, and the hotel rooms happen to be either Airstream trailers, huts, or tents.
Okay, it will cover how many acres of land, all these units?
So it's an almost 19-acre lot, and many parts of it are not developable. It's developable because it's got very deep arroyos and very steep hillsides because it sits completely flush right against Bear Mountain. But the back side of the lot is Secret Mountain Wilderness. The east side of the lot is Secret Mountain Wilderness. The south and western sides of the lot are Coconino National Forest lands.
I know from hiking above that area on Bear Mountain that the canyon that it would be on is really significant resource. It's absolutely sort of unpolluted now. And having a – so if you have 85 units, and then another 15 units, then you have bathrooms, you have a sewage plant. Apparently they're going to have a clubhouse and a swimming pool. So that's a lot of development beyond. So if you imagine the Airstream sitting there and some tents sitting there on this acreage. You have to imagine all the support area, big parking lot, sewage plant, clubhouse.
Yeah, they're doing their own treatment. Their own sewage treatment.
So it's a major intrusion into an area that's largely unspoiled. There are a couple old cabins there that have been grandfathered in from, I don't know, it looks like the 1920s or 30s. So what is your objection to this? I mean, I've walked the area, frankly, and it's just a stunning area. It's right up against the mountain. It's right up against the mountain. There's this beautiful Arroyo Canyon coming down off of Bear Mountain, and this thing would be in the middle of it.
Yep.
So what are your objections to that, I guess?
So let's start with the fact that they have to rezone the land. So right now that land is designated as residential 2-acre minimum. And the developers are asking that it be changed to a planned area development with a density of 100 units.
So, Charlie, real quick, that would mean about 8 to 9 homes there if it stays zoned the way it is. Okay.
And not only is the density way out of line, obviously, with anything else in the neighborhood where everything is that same residential 2-acre minimum, but they also have to put a 3/4-mile asphalt road in all the way from where the cattle guard is, just as the pavement ends, out to the house site. And again, that road would, one side of the road would be on Secret Mountain Wilderness, and the other side of the road would be on Coconino National Forest. And using AutoCamp's numbers, they project somewhere between 15 and 20,000 visitors a year, generating 150,000 vehicle round trips a year. This is in an area that gets 0 to 10 visitors a day, that has a few four-wheel drive, because right now if you want to drive back to the property, you need a vehicle that's four-wheel drive with high lift and capable of four-wheel low. So this is a complete change in the nature of this whole pristine area. I took a 60-year-old, grizzled old developer, as I like to call him, back there, and he walked around the site for about 15 minutes, and he said, this site should be a World Heritage site. It shouldn't be a 100-unit hotel in the middle of this pristine, on the edge of this pristine wilderness area and in the middle of Coconino National Forest. Now, you talked about the canyon directly behind the property. And that canyon runs from northeast, and our prevailing winds come from the southwest. And I walked this canyon, hiked this canyon with a friend of mine who was a hotshot firefighter in the Sierras for 15 years. And he said, this is not a canyon. This is a chimney. And why do they call it a chimney? Because if a fire starts at the bottom, it draws instantly up the canyon, and that canyon goes up about 1,000 feet above the level and then goes into the interior Secret Mountain Wilderness. Now, remember, they have 100 open campfires and 15,000 visitors a year and 150,000 vehicle trips a year. And I don't know how many of your listeners have driven to Phoenix this year down I-17, but at least every 5 or 10 miles, you can see a fire started from a car that burned hundreds or thousands of acres on either side of I-17. So it's not just the fire pits, but it's also all the vehicle trips. Everywhere you look, this thing is a fire risk.
Yeah, and Charlie, real quick, will you tell us, because normally there are no fires allowed in that area,
correct?
Right? And go ahead.
The Forest Service designates that whole area, it's at the foot of Bear Mountain, as no camping, no campfires, no off-road vehicle traffic. It's meant to stay pristine. And one of the reasons for that is they like to keep it remote. We talked to the assistant fire management officer at the Forest Service, and he said, well, we don't have fires back there because there are not any people back there. And we all laugh because this is kind of the opposite of that. And the other thing that's very true about this property and this, you know, the whole Bear Mountain area is sacred to every Native American tribe within 100 miles. And there are significant rock art all along the base of Bear Mountain. There are old dwellings. There are all these places that it takes one person on social media to find this place, publish the coordinates of it, take a picture of it, and if two or three people walk to that place, given the fragility of our desert soil, there'll be a path that lasts for 10 years.
There'll also be a lot of missing stuff, pottery and things, because there are sensitive archaeological sites. I don't want to be too specific or say exactly where they are, but they're very near that canyon, and there are some very interesting things there. I've watched the site, even though it's way off trail, disintegrate over the years. People have picked up the pottery. People have tried to dig into the agave roasting pit, so forth and so on. There were people living up there. We don't know why. But the idea of having a whole bunch of campers below there, of having a sort of a chimney of fire coming up there, it's extremely dry. I mean, when it's wet, it's very wet. When it's dry, it's very dry.
And it sits essentially in the throat of a funnel. So the Bear Mountain basically makes a right turn around the lot. So, and the canyon sits right in the corner of that right turn. So our beautiful prevailing winds that come at 15 or 20 miles an hour blow right into the mouth of that chimney like a big fan in front of your fireplace and blow that and anything that started. And another, you know, these guys are smart. They position themselves as environmentally conscious. You go to their website, you'll see the letters from the Yosemite Conservancy and dot, 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 dot. Except their site at Yosemite is an hour and a half from the park. It's not at the foot of Half Dome. And this is would be at the equivalent of being at the foot of our Half Dome.
Right, Bear exactly. Mountain. And all three of their existing facilities now are based on a trailer park model, right? Didn't they go in, buy up trailer parks that disrepair, fix them up, and then make them auto camps? Isn't that kind of how they've run until now, how they've set them up?
That's how they got started, and that model proved to be so profitable that a private equity company invested Airstream invested in them. So all you get is Airstream trailers. And they're not changing the color of them because it's an Airstream brand. So they're going to be shiny.
For a while. That lot
is not flat. So the trailers are actually going to be terraced up the hillside so that if you're in Jerome, they're going to be shining right in your face. And they're going to be another 115 shiny cars or 120 shiny cars in the parking lot. So they're going to be 200 shiny objects sitting there in your eyesight. You can see it on 89A when you're driving from Cottonwood to Sedona. There are three or four different places where the lot is quite clearly visible, and you can see it from 525.
I've heard that they've refused, and I haven't double-checked this. I've heard that they've refused a land trade from the Forest Service, that they're insisting on that site and won't take any other.
To the best of my knowledge, the Forest Service has not offered a land trade of any kind with them. They have not even started the scoping process on the request to upgrade the road from its primitive state to asphalt. And in the Coconino National Forest 2018 plan, 152 is called out as being a primitive road. So they would have to amend the Forest Service plan to change 152E, which is the road designation that goes from the cattle guard back to the property, to a two-lane asphalt road. So it's another big ask. These guys are asking for a lot. And one of the things when you ask for a lot from the county is the county and its residents ought to get something in return. And when I run the numbers, it looks to me like the county might get $110,000, $120,000 a year in taxes. That's on a $250 million budget that the county has. So it's literally a drop in the bucket. And smart people would say, well, what's it cost to deliver ambulances, fire, and police, i.e. the sheriff, to that site? Sheriffs have to come from Cottonwood. That's 45 minutes each way. The police, I mean, the police, sheriffs would come from Cottonwood, the ambulances and fire trucks would come from the Sedona Fire District in Sedona, and again, that's 20, 25 minutes round trip each way. And during that period of time, those of us who already live here won't get those services because they'll be being used by people from out of town who don't understand our altitude, they don't understand our humidity, they don't understand what rattlesnakes are, they don't understand what steep terrain is. You know, they're not. We're putting them in wilderness area, and they really won't understand because this area has grazing rights from Windmill Ranch. They really won't understand that the 2,000-pound bull out there is not particularly friendly. This is a bull or a cow that has learned to live with coyotes and bobcats and the occasional mountain lion and bear that might come down out of Secret Mountain Wilderness. And one of the reasons they would come down is there's a beautiful water stock tank back there. All the water for that tank either comes across the proposed road or directly through the property, and the majority of it comes directly through the property. The arroyos through the property are 15, 20, in places 25 feet deep. So there's a lot of water that comes through that property when we get one of our classic 2 to 4 inch microbursts in an hour.
Sedona City Council met on the issue, and their technical people said that it wouldn't add anything revenue-wise to Sedona, that it was sort of a total wash. And I think some of the preliminary guesses at the county level are because of the way it's structured, the taxes would be very small, as you mentioned, and it really not compensate for the amount of effort that would go into it. Dina, do you have a feel? You live out in the area. Tell us a little bit about what the area is like.
Bear Mountain is a magical, magical place. We do have some significant issues out here with traffic. The 152C coming from Sedona, we are so overrun with rental OHVs, Jeep tours, campers, RVs. The traffic is absolutely unbelievable. The dust, if you ever come to the area, you'll understand what the dust levels are.
And it's killing the trees, as we talked about the other day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That dust is so significant and so bad that it covers the trees and it blocks the photosynthesis. If you drive down the dirt road portion of 152C, which is 2 miles long, you will see hundreds of dead and dying trees. Auto camp will significantly increase this already overwhelming problem, and it's going to be devastating for the area and the environment and the residents who live here.
Yeah, the traffic. Tell people the name of your YouTube channel where they can watch videos that you've made of the traffic out there.
Let me interrupt you for a minute.
Yeah.
I have to drop off so that Donna Michaels can call in, which she's going to do momentarily.
That's a good trade.
All right?
Yeah, yeah, and we'll let you call back. So I asked Donna to call in because I wanted to make sure that the new supervisor-elect
Yay.
Heard what you guys had to say.
And excellent.
And so I think it's very important. I think the question Hava asked would be very good. I've been out there. We used to take tourists out there when I did Jeep tours 6-7 years ago, and we took them out there because it was really quiet and empty. Mm-hmm. And we had these slow tours at sunset, and we went out to a beautiful hill and mm-hmm. we looked at the sunset and the rocks and stuff. I went out there recently, and it's a total mess. The roads are all torn up. The
right.
ATVs, see, a Jeep, you're poking along at a fairly reasonable rate. These ATVs are just roaring around the area, and they're doing a tremendous amount of damage. Donna, are you on?
I am. Good morning, everyone.
Oh, thank you for joining
Donna.
Us. Do you
Hi,
know?
Donna.
Good morning.
Do you know Deanna and Bendley and Charlie Pitcher?
Good morning, all. Actually, I have been listening with great interest to the program this morning, so I think I'm up to speed in terms of the major points that your guests have been making this morning. You know, firstly, I have to applaud. This is civic engagement at its best. It is what, for those of you who know me, I predicated my entire campaign on. How do we engage or re-engage our citizenry? And what a great model this morning's conversation is of that. All the members of the Bear Mountain effort, boy, hats off to you. You know, if we had more engagement like this, my work would be, and all of our supervisors' work would be made much easier, because we would understand fully what the issues are from our citizens, our taxpayers, our constituents' perspective.
Well, Donna, do we even need to maybe make the first formal public announcement that you won your election District 3 supervisor?
That's
congratulations.
Right. Congratulations.
We're
Donna,
very excited
for your
you.
Victory.
And us.
First
thanks.
Woman, first Democrat to
yeah.
be a supervisor. Is
yeah,
that correct?
So exciting.
Well, thank you very much for that. Let me just quickly say that this is a victory of our community, all of our rural communities, our Verde Valley area. What happened here is an example of what we can do when we engage as community. So it's really your victory, and I applaud you and all of our listening audience who participated. And let me quickly say, whether you voted for me or not, my pledge to you is to serve you from this moment forward. Obviously, as it relates to this particular matter, I cannot take a formal position. One, I'm not sworn in. I'm an interloper at this point.
When will you be sworn in, Donna?
That will be, as I understand. I haven't received a formal notification
right.
yet from the county, but I understand it will be January 4. And so the important thing as it relates to this and other applications in the pipeline that if we have time to talk about, I'd be delighted to, is that I will not, just as I wouldn't as a hearing officer, weigh in on any information until it's complete, and obviously until the P&Z Commission has made a recommendation to me. That said, it's pretty clear for those who know my campaign that, you know, our vision as a community, District 3 and Yavapai County in general, is to make sure that we're good stewards, that we're good stewards of the land, that we're good stewards of our community, and that we ensure that stewardship to the fullest possible application of our community plans. And I see no reason to change what the major planks in my platform were that got me elected going forward as supervisor.
I think we were hearing from Deanna and Charlie, and Auto Camp sounds appalling just from their description of it, and we haven't even gotten around our next question to them is, what are the objections to Auto Camp? Because a lot of them seem just implied in the description of it. I mean, I hope that the Forest Service could buy that piece of land. It shouldn't be even developed with large homes. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit what your objection? Do you want to hang on the line? I thank you for calling in, Donna. Congratulations on being supervisor. You're also the first supervisor from Sedona, right?
That's right. So a lot of firsts, but let's make a pledge that what the result of this first will be is that we'll raise the bar of what stewardship is, can be, that we'll be the model not only for our area, but this state. And thank you very much, Stephen, for and Klaus and the guys. It's been a while since I've been able to see you all, but I very much appreciate the opportunity to weigh in this morning, and I look forward to being a public servant for District 3 in Yavapai County, I hope for the rest of my life. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
And we hope to have you on the show again soon,
yes.
Maybe next month. We'll be in contact. Thanks very much for calling in, and thanks for very much for listening to the show.
See you soon, Donna.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So Charlie or Deanna, tell us, I've seen all the dead trees. I've seen an area be sort of pristine. When we did Jeep tours, I mean, it was quiet. That's why we took people out there. Now it's roaring ATVs. We were driving on the road. These guys just slam. The excitement of ATVs, I guess, is speed and ripping up things.
Right. So let's, you know, Deanna, back to your videos that you've made. You sat with a few breaks from your husband. You sat for 10 hours on Memorial Day, and you counted the number of vehicles. And, of course, you recorded it. You can see them just screaming by. The amount of dust that lingers basically constantly because of the volume. Tell us a little bit about what's happening, noise, traffic, and the dust. That's kind of one of your major concerns where you're at in that proximity.
Absolutely. The OHV rental industry is a big business in Sedona, and it's a very successful business. And the best place to send these people is out here on the 152C, which is a two-mile stretch of dirt road, and then they kind of branch off into other small roads out here in the forest. And the traffic is absolutely staggering. On Memorial Day weekend, I counted in only a 10-hour period 521 vehicles, and 320 of them were OHVs. So almost 60% of the traffic is OHVs. When these vehicles hit the dirt road, these people kind of lose it a little bit.
Right, there's no speed limits out there.
It's their own personal racetrack.
Mm-hmm. And Deanna, what's an OHV?
Off-highway vehicle, which would include a RZR, a side-by-side, any kind of vehicle like that. These machines were designed to go fast. These people are not out here to sightsee, to have a picnic. They are here to go fast.
And are there posted speed signs out there? They're not on that dirt road, are there? I mean, are they just kind of given a kind of stick within this speed limit, or is it just kind of whatever goes?
There are no speed limits on Forest Service roads. There is kind of a unwritten law that it is reasonable and prudent, which, how do you define that? How do you go to court and decide or get a judge to rule on what is reasonable and prudent for any particular person? So it is really almost unenforceable. So the people who rent these machines, they know full well when they come out here, they're probably not going to face any kind of law enforcement, and they know that. Now, when I did my traffic study, I have a radar gun that I bought off of Amazon. I'm clocking people at 30, 40, and over 50 miles per hour on a dirt road.
Wow.
Now, this dirt road also runs adjacent to several residents, local residents who own land or homes. So you've got that. The noise is nonstop, and I've documented all of this so that when I work with and talk to government officials, I can show them what's happening. So our YouTube channel is called Save Bear Mountain, and probably the best video to watch, although I would suggest watching them all, Save Bear Mountain 2 was the Memorial Day weekend, and I have all kinds of actual video from that weekend of people speeding, the noise level, and not to mention the dust, which kills the trees.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
What a way to spend Labor Day weekend. It seems to me that one of the most obvious things we should do is see to it that there's a speed limit on this road, right? It shouldn't be impossible.
Tom says that the county sheriff said that the speed limit is from the county's point of view, is unenforced because there's not any county vehicles out there. It's 35 miles an hour. And 35 miles an hour on those roads
that's
is
fast.
Something else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to understand, this was a contemplated, quiet area that we took people out to see jackrabbits and deer and, mm-hmm. you know, and hawks and eagles. And now it's a giant mess. And now they want to build auto camps. So I've got to say, I am really sympathetic to Save Bear Mountain's cause. You guys have a website?
We have a website, savebearmountain.com. And you can go there and we will put your comments in and register, and we will forward those comments to the county. You can also register for the planning and zoning hearing, which is at 9 o'clock on December 3rd. We have a Facebook page, which you could go to, and guess what it is? It's Save Bear Mountain. And you can like that and share it. And we have a YouTube channel, and guess what that is? It's Save Bear Mountain. So,
okay, so all you have to do is...
Save Bear Mountain on Facebook. And in particular, we've already sent from that site more than 200 letters into the county opposing this process.
So this meeting got moved back. It was supposed to be tomorrow it was supposed to be this week. And because of the pushback, because of your guys' involvement with development services calling, you really guys had to spend some time alerting them to what was happening out there, and they took one look at that, a little deeper look, and said, okay, we need to take some look at traffic and all of these things you guys have brought up. So now it's being pushed back until December. I don't think you have a date yet, but we do know it's been postponed.
It's December 3rd, Hava.
Oh, okay, great. December 3rd.
We'll have to remind people then because... go ahead. Well, it's important to... I'm sorry.
You can register on the SaveBearMountain.com site for that meeting, but you won't get an acknowledgement until a week ahead of time because they don't open up the WebEx. It will be a virtual meeting. It's not an in-person meeting. They don't open up the WebEx reservations until 7 days ahead of the meeting. And so if you can register now, we'll hold your registration. We'll put it in for you, and then you will get an email after registration is opened up.
Excellent. Good. So people can definitely stay involved.
I want to come back to the speed limit for a second. So if we have a 35-mile speed limit and we have signs, but you say that there's no police out there to enforce it, it seems to me that if police crews are parked at an obvious spot, the county could make a lot of money because it's one after the other, right?
Problem, so, Klaus, is that 35 miles an hour is way too fast. And these are people renting ATVs, and they don't know the culture of being off-road. There's all kinds of unwritten rules. You have to way slow down if you're approaching anyone so you don't dust them. You have to give way to somebody going uphill if you're heading downhill. I mean, there's all these unwritten rules and manners, and you have a whole lot of people who are renting ATVs for the first time in their lives, and they want to have a great time, and they want to roar around, and they don't even know these things exist.
Yeah.
Well, then we have to teach them the hard way,
and
right?
They like to four-wheel drift the corners, and, if you're coming around, I drive a truck. They don't want to run into me, but I don't want to run into them. But, there are many a time when I slam the brakes on because one of these guys comes around the corner sideways on a blind corner.
Oh, wait.
Is this an issue that the city's ever looked at? I'm just wondering about if this has kind of reached
it's outside Sedona City limits.
Yeah, because it's unincorporated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so the only thing the city can do is control the rental agencies, and they have so far no desire to do that. And the problem gets worse. So,
well, state law forbids the city for regulating ATVs. The city has wanted to regulate ATVs for a decade. Like the state law prohibits you from banning plastic bags in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. State law prohibits you from regulating ATVs. They're street legal. There's no way to regulate them. So the city is sitting on more and more ATVs that it can't regulate. And that's because of the state government taking away local control. And I hope that Donna will be really interested in getting more local control for our community.
Absolutely. That was a huge part of her.
And that's going to require a coalition among all of us. That's going to require a coalition from over the mountain, as we like to call it, as locals, i.e. the whole ranching economy that is in Prescott, Chino Valley, and that whole area. And all of us who live in Sedona, we're going to have to work together to get control over things like ATVs, like preservation, like Airbnbs, all of which are issues where local control has been removed at one level or another.
Yeah, I have one of these Airbnbs in my neighborhood, and there have been at least three formal complaints against them that yet they tell me they can't do anything to regulate them. Hava, did you have something you wanted to talk about, bring into the conversation?
I'd love to. Do we want to have Deanna and Charlie on with us while finish up?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of is one piece of this really huge puzzle that we've been piecing together the last couple years with all of these developments that have come across the Planning and Zoning Commissioners' desks and Board of Supervisors, and seen some interesting things come out of these meetings. And I've been paying very close attention since El Rojo, and got involved last year with Nature of Wild Works, met Molly Hogan, the director, when she got a unanimous yes from Planning and Zoning last February. This beautiful sanctuary that she's got out in Topanga, she got a use permit approved by Planning and Zoning. Of course, then it goes to Board of Supervisors. So she got a unanimous yes for this land use permit to move her animals from Topanga to Cornville, to these 8 acres that she has over off of Teesaw Road. It went before the Board of Supervisors months later. Of course, this wasn't a public meeting, but the vice chair took one look at it based on opposition from the same person, and the same opposition took one look at it, sent it back to Planning and Zoning. Now, this whole thing has been quite an interesting two alternate universes, being in meetings and listening to Molly, who's presented exactly what she's bringing over here, this very quiet organization, this sanctuary, and the opposition painting this picture that has really put a halt to her situation here.
So the issue of auto camp, which seems to be one of the worst of these developments, and we'll get back to you guys, is part of a larger conflict of people wanting this and that, people having environmentally very friendly things, people have very unfriendly things. And it's to me, just personally, having walked that land and having hiked many times above it, it seems auto camp's choice of sites seems like it could hardly be worse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any comment on that? What?
I started my first letter to the local law firm that's representing them with, for an environmentally conscious company, you couldn't have picked a worse environmental site from a level of ecological and antiquity damage that your site is going to do on the planet. We couldn't agree with you more on that issue. It's like, and you know, there's nothing about the site that recommends it from a local's perspective. And one of the ways I think about locals is everybody who's local is an investor in Yavapai County.
Right, auto stakeholder.
Camp wants to come, auto camp wants to come extract wealth from our area and return essentially nothing in return.
Right.
And take the money and run. And because they're private equity backed, we know that take the money and run means scale fast, go public, cash out. What happens to this site in 10 years when the trailers have been depreciated? Because you touched on this earlier. They don't pay property tax on the trailers. The trailers are registered with DMV. They're movable assets. So the county property tax goes up only on the 4,500-square-foot community/convention center that they're building. And let's be clear, it's also a convention center. It's set up for corporate people to come and stay there and have meeting rooms, and be able to meet, and have this bonding experience and do these things. And I don't have anything against that. I've been on a lot of those retreats in my life. But this is not the place to do that. That's the perfect statement about it.
Yeah.
This is a private equity operation, did you say?
Correct. $115 million has been invested with a commitment for another $115 million.
It's a big company, Klaus.
Those guys are the worst. Private equity. No conscience whatsoever.
We can't all talk at the same time that way.
But
Charlie and Klaus, real quick, I just wanted to bring up that this land is in escrow. So, Charlie, did you tell me that the sale is contingent upon them getting a rezoning for this property?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they need access from the Forest Service. And we're not even clear how you can ask for a rezone when you don't have ingress and egress.
So, the project, I suggest folks go online, and KSB keeps it on a beautiful. There's a lot of information. There's pictures of this thing. If you have to imagine 10 acres of these vehicles in this very sensitive area. It's beautiful. It's quiet now. But and all those people are going to rent ATVs. They're going to go on a Jeep tour. They're not going to cook out every night. They're going to be traveling back and forth to Sedona. There's already an amazing amount and dangerous traffic on Dry Creek Road. It's a major it's a major boulevard, really, for bikers. And already there are a ton of trucks and vehicles going up and down there. And on weekends, but also during the weeks, there'll be 200-300 cars even parked along Dry Creek Road.
Yeah, there's a lot of really important reasons why this makes no sense. And you know, back to your website, the YouTube channel, I really encourage people to get involved and pay attention to all of these things that are coming across in planning and zoning, and then therefore to the Board of Supervisors. Get involved. See what's going on. You know, I think I brought up Nature of Wild Works just to demonstrate that it works to make your voice heard, whether you're opposing it or you're supporting it. It's really important to really know what's going on and get involved with your community. And, thanks for
Thanks for being with us, guys. Hang on. I've got an announcement, which is that Democrats of the Red Rock, very supportive of Democratic Perspective, have a new program, What Comes Next, Post-Election Updates, Thursday, November 19th at 10 a.m. Donna Michaels, the new supervisor, is going to be there, and Anna Tovar, who's elected to the important Arizona Corporation Commission.
Yes.
And we thank you guys for being with it. We'll have you maybe again in a month or so if this becomes kind of a crisis. Go ahead.
We really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this and educate people on this, and go to SaveBearMountain.com or go to Keep Sedona Beautiful and make your voice heard, because it matters and the county pays attention to it.
Absolutely. They really do.
All right. Next week, folks, we'll shift to national politics. We have Dan Signal, who's a professor expert on electoral politics. And we'll have Karen McKellen, who is about as knowledgeable on local elections as you can find a person experience. So we'll have those two. Dan's going to talk to us. We've had him on the show two or three times. Always a different perspective than we have. Always insights and some predictions, some of which have not exactly happened. Listen to our podcast on vvid.org. We have all our podcasts from the last 9 years on there. And we have some podcasts I think would be very relevant to this kind of issue on land use. Mm-hmm. So check out the website. We hope you'll be with us next week for the next week's show. And we have other shows coming up. We have the Sedona Senate Council, women who were elected, coming in to talk about the election in Sedona. We can ask them about things like auto camp. I don't think they're very enthusiastic about it, but we can ask them about it. So anyway, I would like to thank you very much for listening to the show.
And thank you for having me today, Steve. It's been fun to join you in the studio today.
It's been great to have you, and thank you for coming from all the way from Phoenix.
Yes, and you got me out of bed at the crack of dawn.
I bet.
Well done.
When I invited you, I didn't know you lived so far away. Thank you.
listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.